Our next case on calendar this morning is 67289, Jackson versus Van Dyke. And please make your appearance for the record, and if you wish to reserve time.
Good morning, Your Honor. Gordon DiPoli for the Jackson Trustees. I hope to reserve a minute or two for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Your Honor, we raise two issues in this appeal. The first issue is whether the evidence supports the district court's finding that the current owners of lands referred to as Green Acres directly diverted water from a spring located in California, Spring A, and placed such water directly to beneficial use on their lands prior to 1914 if you use California law, or prior to 1905 if you use Nevada law. The second issue is whether in a proceeding initiated under the special statutory adjudication provisions of Chapter 533 to determine claims and rights to water, a court has jurisdiction to order the Jackson trustees to allow the Gronendike trustees reasonable access to water facilities affecting the Gronendike property but located on the Jackson property. In order to address the first issue, I need to provide a little narration of a little bit of geography. Spring A comes to the surface on national forest lands in the state of California, north and west of the what is referred to in our brief as the Barham Heritage Ranch, and west of Green Acres. If it had been left undisturbed, Spring A would flow into what is referred to in the briefs and in the state engineer's order as unnamed creek, into that creek under Foothill Road, and would be accessible to Green Acres. It would not reach any part of the Barham Heritage Ranch that's on the west side of Foothill Road, and would reach only a portion of the Barham Heritage Ranch on the east side of Foothill Road. Green Acres is located east of the Barham Heritage Ranch and is all east of Foothill Road. The Barham Heritage Ranch, which is the ranch in which the Jackson water rights have their roots, and those roots are in the west side of the Barham Heritage Ranch, is both west and east of Foothill Road and is south of Green Acres. There is also the Hill property, which is relevant here. The Hill property is directly west of Green Acres on the west side of Foothill Road, and is owned by David and Sheila Hill, who are not parties to this proceeding. It's north of the Barham Heritage Ranch, and there are some springs that surface on that property which feed water into unnamed creek. Under the law, in order to establish a vested right to water, the evidence must show that the owner of Green Acres prior to 1905 or 1914 actually diverted water from that source and used it beneficially on those lands. Admittedly, in 2012, evidence on that issue had to be circumstantial. What the evidence did show is that the Spring A has been placed in two pipelines at its source for a considerable period of time. The clear purpose of those pipelines was to divert water away from Green Acres and onto the Barham Heritage Ranch. While we do not know exactly when that happened, we do know it has been that way for a long period of time, and that some of the pipe, in fact, was wooden pipe. We also know that it provided water to a house, which is shown on a 1904 map, and which Dorothy Barham stated was built prior to 1890. We know that these two ranches, the Barham Heritage Ranch and Green Acres, were separate ranches from 1864 to 1916. And we know that their common ownership from 1916 to 1930 was separated in 1930 in the very same configuration as they were developed. That is important because if the Green Acres owners had been relying on water from Spring A when that water was first placed in the pipeline to divert it away, there would have been a fight. We wouldn't be here today arguing about it because it would have been decided then. In addition, the actions of the Martins, who in the 1960s who were the owners of Green Acres, and McGaw, who was the owner of the Barham Heritage Ranch, at nearly simultaneous times took actions which the Martins did not make any claim to water directly from Spring A, and McGaw did. That is important, I think, for two reasons. One, it happened before these ranches were subdivided into smaller parcels. And second, it happened at a time when there was at least some secondhand knowledge of the history of how these ranches were developed. McGaw, in his application, stated that the pipelines had been in place for over 100 years and had been improved many times. That evidence, we think, very clearly establishes that the Spring A water in the pipelines was for the Barham Heritage Ranch and not for Green Acres. So what did the court rely on to conclude otherwise? It relied on a 1905 culture map, a 1938 aerial photograph, a 1939-40 aerial photograph, and a 1950 aerial photograph, which show, and we don't dispute this, that there was homogeneous vegetation and that the ranches looked to be equivalently irrigated during those snapshots in time. But that doesn't say anything about where the water was coming from. We also know, again, and it's undisputed, and the state engineer found, that the Green Acres parcels had access to several sources of water independent of Spring A, including Miller Creek, an unnamed creek, and Spring D. And the Green Acres parcels received tailwater runoff from the Barham Heritage Ranch that's on the east side of Foothill Road. So there was adequate water for them, for Green Acres, to show irrigation that was equivalent to the Barham Heritage Ranch during those particular snapshots in time. Finally, the court concluded that it was possible physically to get water from Spring A to Green Acres, and we don't dispute that. However, there must be more shown than it's physically possible to get water to a land. You must show that water from that source is actually put on that land to beneficial use prior to those dates, and the existence of a pipeline taking the water the other way suggests otherwise. I certainly recognize that there is an uphill battle in this court arguing over facts. However, if there is a case where the facts don't support a district court conclusion, I think this is that case. On the second issue, I recognize that a district court would have jurisdiction in a properly filed case with the right pleadings and the right parties to determine what access that someone has to a third party's lands and for what purposes. But that's not what this proceeding was. This proceeding was a special statutory proceeding under Chapter 533 established by the legislature to hear and receive claims and to determine claims to the water rights. This court has said in prior cases that that process is intended to bring about a speedy, summary, and effectual determination of the relative rights to claimants of water for purposes of administration and regulation. Those provisions and their purposes don't involve the court or the state engineer in issues not directly related to claims to water. If you look at the statutes in those special provisions, the state engineer is to make an investigation as essential to the determination of claims to water. Participants are to submit proof of their claims to water. The state engineer is to make a preliminary order of determination as to claims to water. Claimants are to provide exceptions to what the state engineer determines. After hearing the objections, the state engineer is to issue a final order defining the claims and the rights to the sources of water. That is then filed in the district court and becomes the complaint. Parties in interest can file exceptions to that complaint within a specific time frame allowed by the court, and those documents are deemed to be the pleadings in the case. Involving the state engineer and the district court in issues not directly related to water simply is inconsistent with what the statutes say the parties are to be doing before the state engineer and with the purpose of the statute. And I think this proceeding could provide a good example. It started in 1987 and ended in 2014. One can only imagine when it might end if the state engineer and the court were allowed to and get into issues that were not related to claims to water. But even if the district court could get into issues of access, those issues needed to be raised 5 days prior to April 1, 2009, because that's when the court set the date for filing exceptions to the state engineer's final order. And those exceptions and the complaint and the final order become the pleadings in the case, and there shall be no other pleadings, is what the statute said and says. And pleadings have a purpose. Pleadings frame the issues. They give the parties the opportunity to know what to defend against during the proceedings. Here, there were no exceptions filed by Gronendijk within 5 days before April 1, 2009 related to access. In 2012, Gronendijk filed a supplement to exceptions and a motion to allow access to the pipeline for repair before the court. However, as we pointed out in our opposition to that motion, the portion of the pipeline that Mr. Gronendijk wanted repaired was not on Jackson property. It was on National Forest lands. We also pointed out that much, if not all, of the pipeline itself is not on the Jackson property, or is not on Jackson property at all, but is actually on the property of David and Sheila Hill, who were not parties to the proceeding before the court. This court, in the Carpenter case and in the G&M Properties case that we cited in our brief, has determined on in both cases that exceptions cannot be raised or filed, and the district court has no jurisdiction to hear exceptions which are filed after the time originally set for filing exceptions. So here, even if one were to construe what was filed in 2012 as a claim for access to the Jackson property, it was not timely, and this court's in those two cases has said that the court has no jurisdiction to hear the untimely claims. It did that based on the fact that the court, or that the legislature, intended the final order and the exceptions to be the pleadings in the case. The pleadings here were limited to issues related to claims to water. And because of that, there is nothing in this record which shows what facilities Gronendijk is to have access for what purpose. There is nothing in this record which shows that any of those unidentified facilities are on land that Jackson owned when this proceeding started, or on any land that Jackson owns when we were before the district court or today. The only thing the record shows is that the pipeline itself is located on National Forest lands. A substantial part, if not all of it, is on the Hill property. Your Honor, for all of those reasons, we think that the district court's decision should be reversed and the court instructed to modify the decree accordingly. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the Court. I'm going to divide my time. I'm going to try to use between 8 and 10 minutes, and Mr. Carlson will use the remainder. I'm Brian
Stockman. Let me ask the first question, since appellant has raised it. Why is this the proper case to rule on reasonable access to the Jackson property? He said it isn't proper, that it should have been done in this case, that it wasn't correctly brought before Judge Gamble. Could you defend the position of Judge Gamble in allowing reasonable access to the Jackson property, not the Hill property, but the Jackson property?
Your Honor, that's Mr. Carlson's issue. The state engineer didn't participate in that significantly because it's an issue of title, and the state engineer is statutorily prohibited from deciding issues of title. But the facts clearly show that Mr. Jackson has placed a gate with a lock on it across the road that Mr. Gronendijk would have to use to get into where the pipeline is. And so the access point, and for a while they shared the combination to the gate, but then something happened and that was no longer the case. And so Mr. Jackson's gate is the sticking point, and that's what Judge Gamble was ruling on. So real quickly, I'm Brian Stockton, Senior Deputy Attorney General, representing the Nevada State Engineer, and we're here on the factual issue of whether the Green Acres properties had a vested water rights. And the state engineer found that these vested water rights, the irrigation started in 1853.
Well, how are you, both sides are asking us to be fact finders in this case. It seems like Judge Gamble did the fact finding. Why should we now worry about the fact finding?
Well, I'm hoping you won't, because Judge Gamble basically adopted the state engineer's factual findings from the final order of determination. So I'm here to argue that you should accept Judge Gamble's interpretation of the facts. And so I'd like to talk about a couple of things. Well, let's talk about what this evidence the district court had, that Judge Gamble had. First, he had the state engineer's final order determination.
No, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. This adjudication started in the 1990s, and the state engineer did the investigation, issued the preliminary order of determination, and the final order of determination. The district court had that evidence to rely on. He also had witnesses that testified at the hearing. But one of the most important pieces of evidence that Judge Gamble had was we took a judicial view of the property. And Judge Gamble and all the parties, we walked up to Spring A, and Spring A sits right in the channel of Unnamed Creek. And that's significant. But we walked up there, we saw the collection box from the spring, we saw where the pipeline starts as it heads down to Mr. Jackson's property, we saw the holes in the pipeline that Mr. Gronendijk is complaining about. So the judge had the opportunity to see that. He also was able to see the place where there's a valve in the 6-inch pipeline, and that valve allows water to go down the side of Mr. Jackson's road to the original place where it went under Foothill Road and got to the Green Acres property. And then he also saw the diversion works on the east side of Foothill Road, so he was able to see all that. Now, Mr. Jackson talks about the fact that when the 6-inch pipeline was put in, that there should have been a fight at that time if the Green Acres property really wanted their water. But we would submit that it's just as likely that they could have cooperated. Mr. Jackson goes through the deeds to this property, and when the United States issued their patents, they issued them right along section lines. And the parties cooperated through a series of deeds to adjust those property lines to the property that they had actually settled. We also note, and the state engineer found that this is significant, is that the two parties that owned the Green Acres property and the Barham Heritage Ranch property had the same last name. So in the 1850s, 1860s, it's likely that people would have cooperated with their own family so that everybody could survive, because that's the only support system you would have there. Now, as to the permit that Mr. Jackson's arguing about, it's permit number 24919, filed by Mr. McGaugh. As we pointed out in the answering brief, that permit only asked for 2/3 of the flow of Spring A to go into that pipeline. And there was a competing permit, which I just found recently, 24526, which was filed by Green Acres for the other 1/3. The problem is both the state engineer and the final order determination found that those permits were superseded by the vested right claims that the parties had filed in this case. And so those weren't litigated before the district court. So if you find that significant, I mean, the only way to deal with that would be a remand back to the district court so he could hear the facts of that case. Now, Mr. Jackson talks about the fact that Miller Creek.
Let me just ask this to make sure that my colleagues listen. Are you conceding that we should remand this case back for that finding?
No, I'm only saying if you find. See, they're making arguments that I don't believe we litigated in the district court. So if you find those are significant, then you have to remand. But we believe there's ample substantial evidence to support Judge Gamble's decision, and we put that in the case. Now, at Exhibit 1 to the state engineer's appendix, there's a map in there, which is an enlargement of the 1904 plane table map. And just real quickly, the guy that made the plane table map had a flat surface that he stood next to with an instrument, and he had a surveyor with a surveyor stick out there. So he was looking at what was exactly on the ground there. And he found that this whole area was irrigated pretty much the same, and he didn't actually show the water sources for all those very clearly. But the fact that they were all irrigated about the same. And so I'd like to go to... So in finding of fact number 16, the district court made a statement that Mr. Jackson quotes in full in his opening brief, and he says that although no water from unnamed spring A is asserted to have been historically diverted to reach the Green Acres parcel directly, so I just want to make it clear that Mr. Jackson is the only one making that argument. The state engineer is arguing exactly the opposite, and the district court found exactly the opposite. The district court goes on to say, though, that the capability to do so exists today as observed during the site visit and is known to have existed historically based on the early construction of the wooden pipeline. So the pipeline came down the hill and brought the water from the spring, but it had a valve. If the valve was turned one way, it would divert the water to Mr. Jackson's property and the rest of the Heritage Ranch. If it was turned the other way, it would divert the water to part of the Heritage Ranch and then onto the Green Acres property after that. So Mr. Jackson argues that one of the findings of fact was that there's more water than is needed on the Heritage Ranch. And Mr. Jackson says, well, it's no big deal because the Green Acres didn't have water rights because they would have run it down, it's actually back Black Bear Trail ditch, and then into the Fredericksburg ditch to be administered with the Carson River water. The problem with that logic is the reason we're here today is that these streams were not adjudicated. They were not considered tributary to the Carson River, and therefore they were not adjudicated in the Carson River decree. And so that's evidence that all this water was used up efficiently on these properties before it got to the Carson River diversion works. So back to Miller Creek. Miller Creek is the creek to the north here. And part of the Green Acres parcels are irrigated with Miller Creek water. If you look on the map that's Exhibit 1 in the state engineer's appendix, there's some yellow parcels, and because topographically they're above where the water came out under Foothill Road to go onto the Green Acres properties, those properties received water from the Miller Creek. But the evidence is clear, and the diversion works support this, that the water was able to reach those properties. So real quickly, I'd like to go into Mr. Jackson's argument about tailwater versus drain and wastewater. And the state engineer prefers to call the tailwater return flows. So when you irrigate your field, you flood it across the field, the water pools up at the end, and then you put it back into the diversion ditch. That's tailwater, and that's used to satisfy other existing rights. The drain and wastewater is different. That's water that's used to irrigate, but the irrigator is not able to return that water to the system. So in other words, it just runs off in the sagebrush. And that was the Ryan versus Galeo case that this court decided. And in that case, Ms. Ryan was able to irrigate her property, but when it got to the end of her property, she wasn't able to return it to the Humboldt River system. Mr. Galeo captured that water and started using it to irrigate, but then when Ms. Ryan changed her diversion works, that water was no longer available to Mr. Galeo. And so this court properly held that Mr. Galeo could not get a water right. And the reason was, once that water is returned to the Humboldt River, it's fully spoken for. And in this case, it's our position that you have the same thing. The Green Acres properties did have water rights, so this tail water comes back into the system and is able to get back to the Green Acres property, even after it's used to irrigate Mr. Jackson's property. So, as my initial question or second question was, it's our position that Mr. Jackson is merely offering an alternative view of the facts and that the district court had ample evidence to support its decision. Thank you.
May it please the court, Seth Carlson from the law firm Kempfer Kroll on behalf of respondent Edward Gronendijk is trustee of the Gronendijk Family Trust. Justice Cherry, you asked whether the district court appropriately acted in terms of, I guess we'll call it, granting access across the Jackson property or onto the Jackson property. And the briefing on behalf of the appellants cites some cases that talk about solely appropriating water doesn't simultaneously grant a right of access. And I think the difference in this case is we have the historical use of the water. We also have the historical distribution system that's there. And so in our briefing, we see a distinguishment of we're not being granted an appropriation and then simultaneously being granted access to any property. We have an easement, perhaps we have a license, but the historical use of the distribution system, what we're asking the state, and we asked the state engineer, and in his finding he says parties are going to have a right to repair the infrastructure, talks about the head gates and the infrastructure, which would be piping, and distributing that cost over those who benefit from it. And so historically, the parties who are using this land, using this water, maintaining that infrastructure, had that access. Whether it was through an easement or through a license, that was already in place. That was in place at the time the state engineer made his findings in his final order and submitted that to the district court. The district court then, even though the exceptions were filed at that later date, the district court goes out into the field and sees where there are problems with the pipe, holes in the pipe. We have an affidavit from Mr. Gronendijk in the record talking about not being able to get access to the valve, which is on the Jackson property. That affidavit also talks about trying to enlist the state engineer to assist in Mr. Gronendijk continuing to have access over this property where his predecessors have had that access to put this water to use. So here what we're really looking at is we have an owner that has an existing easement and whether the district court can enforce that right in this proceeding. And our answer is yes. When you take a look at NRS 536030 governing ditches and 533190, those statutes grant both the state engineer and the district court the power to require and allow the replacement of a ditch or a pipe and then allocating those costs to those who benefit from it. The pipe is a part of that distribution system. In terms of the state engineer's order, where the state engineer talks about having that right to maintain, it's at the appellant's appendix at volume 1, page 29, and it's also cited in the state engineer's brief.
Do you have any knowledge as to why the gate was put up, a locked gate was put up? What happened between the parties? It sounded like they were able to exist together at one time, and now they can't?
And Your Honor, I wasn't trial counsel. I inherited this case after Scott Brook passed. My understanding is that the parties have had times where they've been able to get along and times where they haven't. But, you know, I would certainly say that the indication of a gate with a lock and preventing access that's been there historically from predecessors and even between the Gronendijks and the Jacksons would indicate that relationships weren't good, at least at that point in time.
Well, you reminded me yesterday about Mark Twain saying whiskey is for drinking and water is for fighting, so I guess that's what this is in this case.
I wouldn't disagree with that, Your
Honor. Should we be troubled by the argument that was made as the failure to file timely exceptions?
Your Honor, I think certainly that's a downside. I would look at what Judge Gamble did, and you look at the time frame in which the state engineer conducted his work and then submitted that order to the court. We also have to, I think, take into consideration NRCP 1, which grants a district court a fair amount of leeway in terms of trying to expedite matters before the court. I don't have the statute in front of me, but under the adjudication statute, it specifically states that the rules of civil procedure will apply. We have the briefing before Judge Gamble, which cites the statutes which I've referenced today, which are the legal basis that both the state engineer and the district court can address those issues with respect to infrastructure. And if he's going to be ruling on Mr. Gronendijk's resource right, and there's historical background that there's been access to this infrastructure for decades, if not close to a century. It would make sense where he's been able to be out in the field to see what's going on to make that conclusion.
Any final questions?
No.
Thank you.
Gordon DiPoli for the Jackson Trustees. A couple of things. The site visit that was taken in 2012 would not shed any light on what happened when these water rights were established. What the judge saw is the same thing everyone else saw, which is that the Spring A was being diverted to the south, away from Green Acres. The valve that it was that allowed the water to either go all the way south on the west side of Foothill Road or east was there for purposes of getting water to the portion of the Barham Heritage Ranch on the east side of Foothill Road. As far as the parties are having the same last name, that same last name changed in 1882, and there have been no same last names with either property since that time. In terms of the question that your Honor asked, while all this was going on, the portion of the Barham Heritage Ranch on the west side of Foothill Road was developed into a private gated community. It has an automatic gate on it that you punch a code into that the parties can use to go into their properties, but it's been developed, and that's what the locked gate is all about.
Counsel, give us your final thought.
And we're not talking about, we don't know what purpose the judge granted access for. We don't know what facilities he's talking about, and we don't even know if any of the facilities that would be pertinent are actually on the Jackson property. As we pointed out in our briefs, a substantial part of them, if not all, could actually be on the Hill property, and that's why it makes a difference and why you should be concerned about what that statutory adjudication process is all about, because you need to have the right parties in front of the court with the right pleadings to get into those issues, not try to do it in a proceeding that involves just claims to water. Thank you.
We thank counsel for the arguments and the additional argument today. This matter will stand submitted.